Welcome to Ballistic Radio, the fastest growing gun talk show in the country. Join us. We're going to explore the topics of firearms, self-defense, and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough, you need dynamite to take them off. Now, here's your host, John Johnston, on 55KRC, the talk station.
Good evening and welcome to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me after a terribly, terribly, terribly depressing two-week absence from one another, Mr. Andy Overk. Ooh, he's playing footsies with me now, too. Hey, Andy, how's it going?
Pretty good, John.
How were things?
Relaxed.
Yeah. So you didn't have to do the show last weekend because we recorded it.
My wife was pleasantly happy.
I bet she was. We've got a really cool show tonight. We're going to have Ernest Langdon on the line in just a minute. He's actually on the line right now, but we'll actually be speaking with him about all sorts of interesting things that should set the internet ablaze with their controversial nature. We're going to be talking about why 9mm is probably a very good choice for most people to be using as far as their defensive cartridges go for their handguns, and also some of the advantages, actual and perceived, of the true double-action pistols, so the double-action, single-action, such as the classic SIG or Beretta M9, things of that nature. We'll get to that in a second. Just a reminder, this segment brought to you by Colt. Colt, the legend continues. So
you had a week in Texas.
Yeah.
Last week, Texas. How'd you like the medical conference?
It was really, really good. Caleb from Lone Star Medics put on a really good show, especially for a first-year conference. They had, I want to say, like 120, 130 attendees, which, like I said, was...
It'll be big next year.
Oh, yeah. They're going to have a date in the next week or two. I highly suggest that if you are interested in that sort of thing, you you book early because I'm pretty sure it's going to sell out. Mm. It was really cool, though. A lot of interesting classes. Learned a lot of things that I was not as familiar with as I probably should be considering what I do and some of my past experience as well. But it was a lot of fun. Texas looks like Ohio, kind of, at least from the airport shuttle to the hotel.
Oh, yeah.
And then from the...
It would be a state I would live in. It would.
I really couldn't tell you. I just but anyway, it was pretty cool. I ate too much.
You had some of your last tasty meals down there.
Oh,
didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. So we're doing the charity Paleo Purge contest with Jeff Gonzalez at Trident Concepts, and then Ballistic Radio and myself. And we've got two charities. He's got Gary Welt, who is a former Navy SEAL that he is representing, trying to raise money for. And then I've got RampageForTheCure.org, my go-to charity these days. Any charity that donates money to cancer and also references Archer, good thing to me. But we've got this little thing going, and I can't really eat anything, or if I do, I might lose, and then my charity won't get money.
I'll eat your share, and then I'll share pictures.
Yeah, there you go.
Live vicariously through
that, me. That works. That'll be good. So, but yeah, that's going well. I have not cheated yet, which I'm impressed with. I did not think that I still had any willpower left, but apparently I do. And I've lost, I want to say, 11 or 12 pounds, which is good because I gained about 9 or 10 when I was in Texas, kind of stuffing my face before the contest was going to start. But most difficult part, I can't eat my Altoids or drink my Monster energy drinks. Anyway, no one really cares too much, I think, about my diet, if I had to guess at least. But we'll get Ernest online. Real quick, the FNS test pistol, some exciting things with that. We've got, I'm sitting almost around 2,500 rounds. The pistol has been worked on just a little bit to fix some things that I did not like about it. Blackfire Ordnance Group, who is the show's sponsor, so they actually have made a single-sided mag release for me, so a prototype that hopefully we will be offering at some point or another for the FN series of pistols that accept the FNS mag release at some point, assuming that it works. So far, so good. Also done some stuff to the Striker, which has really improved the trigger feel, which once again will be a drop-in kit that we will offer at some point. Also coated the gun in TNT black, which is cool because to my knowledge, it's actually the first application of the black version of the coating. We've been advertising the stuff and it has existed, but they've been getting their website up off the ground and things of that nature. So
maybe we'll have a good hot summer. You can really sweat on it.
Well, it was funny because I didn't have the FN. I was carrying my Smith & Wesson Shield for a little while.
Yeah.
And I had the other test gun apart. But I managed to rust every single pin that is in that gun.
Sure.
And also some of the slide, which is nothing against the Melanite that Smith & Wesson puts on. Anyway, let's get an Ernest on the line, get him introduced to everybody real quick, and then we're going to be going to Bricks shortly. So joining us this evening, Mr. Ernest Langdon. Ernest, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us tonight. I'm sorry for the long-winded nature of the first part of the show. I had a couple things to get over, but anyway.
Not a problem.
So for those that don't know you, do you mind going over your background just a little bit, and then that'll probably take us into the break if you talk slow enough, so...
Yeah, sure. My background is basically starts out in the Marine Corps. I spent 12 years in the Marine Corps, most of that time as a scout sniper with a tour as an instructor at the high-risk personnel program at Quantico, which is a anti-terrorism shooting school there for years. I got out of the Marine Corps and worked in the gun industry for quite some time, worked for Beretta, worked in the ammo industry for a short period of time. I ran my own company for several years and then worked for Smith & Wesson as their director of military sales for about 4.5 years.
Right.
And I just spent about 5 years working as the director of global military programs for a robotics company. And I'm back in the gun industry doing the Langdon Tactical Technology thing again. So.
Excellent. So people are actually going to be able to make it out to your classes here shortly and all that again at some point?
That's true. That's true. I've got 5 classes scheduled this year already. And coming up, you can go to my website, www.langdontactical.com, and check out the course schedule.
I definitely will be making it to one of those as soon as I am able to. You know, we've got a mutual friend in Todd Green, and he speaks incredibly highly of... not only you, but the teaching that you impart to your students. So we've got about 20 seconds left, and then we're going to go to the break. Just real quick, 9mm 40 or 45?
Yeah, 9mm for sure.
Okay. And I take it you've got a bunch of reasons to say that?
Yeah, I've got a multitude of reasons to say that.
Oh, perfect. See, I was hoping that what I'd do is be able to make people angry and then get them to listen. To the next segment through the break. So
John's a people person.
I am a people person. I'm really good at that, actually. So we do have to go to break right now. When we get back, we're going to be speaking with Ernest Langdon about why 9mm is probably a good idea for most people, at least our opinion as to why. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Just a quick reminder, this segment brought to you by Walther and the new PPX. So, before the break, we were making everyone angry on the internet with Mr. Ernest Langdon discussing 9mm 40-45. And I asked Ernest what he preferred, and 9mm was the very strong answer. Ernest, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. So why don't we go into a little bit more detail? And I will say just real quick before we get too deep into this, I'm pro people carrying a gun in any caliber that they choose. And I actually don't care too much what other people do because I'm not the one that has to live with their decisions. Everyone's situation is different. And this is just one of those conversations.
I agree with that as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is just one of those conversations that's fun to have from time to time just to see who gets mad and why. So, anyway, please continue. Set 9mm.
Sure, well, the simple truth of the fact is even the best shooters in the world with the highest skill levels will shoot a 9mm faster or more accurate than they will the other calibers. In a lot of cases, they'll do that both. Everybody will agree that the most important, issue with terminal performance when it comes to handgun calibers is shot placement. So if you're faster and more accurate, that should tell you something right there. The other piece of that is everybody knows that being able to do well or have good shot placement comes down to practice, time on the range, you know, time behind the gun. And for the same financial input, you're going to be shooting at least a third more with 9mm than you are any other caliber from a pure cost perspective. So an individual is going to be able to spend way more time on the range shooting for the same input than they would another caliber. And those reasons right there are the biggest reasons in my mind. The other issue is obviously the performance of 9mm ammunition has come so far over the years to the effect that a lot of police departments are actually switching back to 9mm. Most notably, recently, I just found out Texas DPMS is switching back to 9mm, which is from 3.7 SIG.
Right, I can actually beat that one too. I've seen a couple of reports that I find very credible that pretty much says FBI is going to be switching from 40 caliber down to 9mm.
I've heard the same. To me, it sounds like it's coming very soon. You know, they haven't made any official statements there that I know of, but I've heard from very credible sources that they're definitely going in that direction. And for a long time, the FBI has authorized 9mm for, shooters that had a hard time with 40 caliber.
Right.
But for a lot of reasons, mainly the fact that the 9mm that they're seeing today, the high-performance 9mm rounds, do just as well or better in their, you know, blind barrier or tactical barrier ballistic test as the 40 caliber round.
Right. Some of them even starting to rival the 45 caliber performance. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you mention. I will say this, and I've actually witnessed this, so I agree with you. In 99.9% of all circumstances, that most shooters, the vast majority of shooters, are going to be better served with a 9mm, at least on their performance level. I do know a couple guys, very, very few, but a couple guys that shoot different calibers better. Most notably, there's a guy named Spencer Keepers who makes really good holsters, also a very talented shooter. Shoots 40 caliber, better than 9mm for some reason. Neither one of us can figure it out, and he'd rather shoot 9 just because it's cheaper, like you said. But... as far as going back into that just a little bit, and see, Andy just distracted me slightly because
you kicked me.
No, I didn't kick you. I put my feet under my desk.
He abuses me.
I'm sorry, Ernest. My co-host is trying to get friendly with me in the studio here. We don't have a web camera on, so I guess he thinks he can get away with it. Don't do that. Anyway, what was he saying? Oh, yeah. As far as the 9mm goes, and as far as something that I'd kind of like to examine a little bit further, as far as handguns not really being very good performers no matter what load you use compared to some other things, being quicker and being more accurate, can you get into a little bit more detail about that as far as why?
A couple of things that I would say is, you know, obviously the shot placement comes into the more accurate part.
Right.
But there's been some pretty solid statistics over the years that a determined adversary, one that you are in a, quote, gunfight with, not necessarily in a shooting with, and, those could be two entirely different things.
Yes.
But if you look at the officers victorious in a gunfight, for example, you go from typical law enforcement shooting statistics of about a 17% hit ratio to officers victorious in a gunfight to about a 50% hit ratio with an average of 5 to 6 rounds in the adversary or in the, you know, the perpetrator, if you will.
Right.
So you've got, if they've got a 50% hit ratio, that means they fired 10 to 12 rounds to get to that point. And,
right.
and the reality is that's really good performance in a typical law enforcement gunfight, if you will. Not a shooting, but a gunfight.
Yes.
And so if you're shooting 9mm and you can shoot it faster, you're going to get those, you know, those incapacitating 5 or 6 rounds on target much sooner than you are with a larger caliber.
Right.
And you're going to have more rounds left over at the end of that. If you're shooting nine rounds in the gun 45, you could be the first one at the slide lock.
And in general, why does time in the fight matter? Just for the people that are maybe not familiar with the importance of that.
Say that again.
Why does the amount of time that you can stay in the fight matter before reloading? Just for those that may not be familiar as to why that's such an important thing.
Unlike on video games, things don't just vaporize and fall over when you're in a gunfight. It may take 5, 6, 7 rounds to take down a determined adversary.
Right.
I've got a friend of mine in Chicago that was in a gunfight with his SIG 220-45. And he triple tapped the guy right off the bat with 230 grain hydro shock. And the guy took a step back with the gun in hand, called him a name that we won't mention here.
Thank you.
And came, started to level his gun back down on him again.
Right.
And he ended up emptying his 220 in the guy to finish the fight. Ended up going to slide lock, having to reload his gun. Hit him 8 out of 9 times. He's an exceptional shooter, way above average for sure. And do you want to be the guy that's in that situation that gets a 50% hit ratio, and now all of a sudden you're at slide lock and you haven't finished the job? You're doing a reload while somebody's shooting back at you.
Right. That was an interesting conversation that I got to have with Jared Reston talking about that, and he's a proponent of 9mm too. But in his second of 4 officer-involved shootings that he was involved in, the one where he got shot in the mouth, he had hit the guy, I want to say, 6 or 7 times with a 40 caliber, yeah, and was pretty close to done, and was talking about whether if he had had a 45 or something like that, how he probably would have been empty at that point. So, do you remember the case of the, I want to say it was the motorcycle patrol cop that pulled a guy over for interrupting a funeral procession, and the civilian ended up having to shoot a bad guy off top of him? Do you remember that case off the top of your head?
I don't, actually.
Okay, that was interesting because you mentioned a 220, and the reason why that the other one stuck into my head was the civilian that and essentially what happened is this cop tried to write this guy a ticket for, you know, breaking this funeral procession. The guy tried to bribe him. Well, at that point, he's going to jail. When he tried pulling him out of the car, they got in a physical altercation. Guy got on top of him, started pretty much beating him to death, trying to take his gun and all that. And there was a concealed carry guy that was nearby. Ended up putting, I want to say, 8 rounds into the dude of hydro shock from pretty close range. And finally, the only round that was effective was the one where he walked up and put it into the side of his head.
Contact shot.
Yeah, contact shot.
Yeah.
It just stuck into my head, as far as, no pun intended. Wow, that's a really bad pun too. I didn't even mean it. It just kind of has stayed with me ever since I heard about it, though, just because of the, well, what if you run out? What if there's more than one guy? So,
right, absolutely.
I just thought it was interesting. That seems to be an overlooked,
absolutely,
often overlooked sort of advantage that the 9mm have in comparison to some other things. As far as, we got about a minute
left.
A lot of people
believe that a gunfight typically goes to the capacity of the gun. and at that point, you know, when there's a lull is when someone expires or decides that they don't want to, you know, fight anymore, as far as a law enforcement gunfight goes.
Right.
And so it really comes down to if that's the case, it goes to the capacity of the gun, and with a handgun, that is. Do you really want to be the first one to run out of ammo?
Yeah, and I've seen some interesting statistics there too. And something when we get back, because we've got to go to break, but I would like to sort of delve into the difference between a gunfight and a shooting, just for maybe people that have not put the thought into differentiating between the two. And then we'll talk about double-action pistols and why those are awesome, too. Right now, though, we're talking with Ernest Langdon. When we get back, we'll talk about that other stuff. And you are listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group. Makers of firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms, parts, and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Bear, Sig Sauer, many more, as well as premium ARs. Whether you're looking to protect yourself or are a first-time gun buyer or a competitive shooter even, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearm needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for SIG parts and accessories. I really do like those people. I really do like that I can actually read their commercial now without stumbling over it.
I was amazed.
I kind of feel bad over the first couple that we ran. Just because
I'll buy you a beer after work for that.
Oh,
you're not allowed to have beer.
No, I'm not.
Oh, that's just terrible.
I don't really drink beer anyway. Anyway, back to Ernest Langdon, who I'm sure we are making all sorts of friends with on the internet right now. Ernest, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. I had a question for you, or at least a distinction that I'd kind of like to make. Now, you brought up the difference between a shooting and a gunfight. And I've actually talked with a couple people about this, but do you mind just going into that a little bit, and what does that mean to you?
Sure. So, a shooting could be a lot of things, where it could be a disparity of force issue, where you have a smaller officer against a determined physically aggressive adversary that creates a situation where they have to use lethal force. Could be someone with a knife, a baseball bat, one of those type situations, or it could be, a mistake of fact shooting where it was thought it was a gun and a non-compliant person or something. So there's maybe a round fired or two rounds fired, and that ends the altercation. And that's a shooting. Or it could be somebody with a firearm, but again, it's a one round fired, two rounds fired, and then everything's over. That is not, that's not a gunfight. A gunfight is when there's rounds going in both directions at a rapid rate, with both sides trying to win, and that is a pretty significant distinction between the two.
Right, and just to illustrate the point, because I know a lot of people say, well, that doesn't ever happen. We actually interviewed Justin Schneiders. I always trip over his last name, but cool dude. Blitz 308. If you've ever been on RFCOM, I want to say, and read that account of his shooting that he had. Got into a gunfight with a gentleman that was armed with a five-shot J-frame. He was armed with a 1911, and the gunfight went until the guy ran out of ammo in the revolver. And that was the end of it, was because he ran out of ammo, just to illustrate that point.
Absolutely.
So
it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Why do you think so many people are stuck on the, well, most civilian whatevers?
Three rounds, 3 seconds.
Yeah, blah, three blah, rounds, blah. 3 seconds. And all that. Why?
Yeah.
Why do you think people focus on that so much?
Well, I don't know where that statistic comes from, unless there's been a lot of law enforcement statistics that I've seen that come down to that. But in a lot of cases, they're mixing a shooting and gunfight statistics together.
Right.
So they're all lumped in to the same group of statistics. And in that case, if you lump all of the one or two shots fired shootings in with the gunfight shootings, that can dramatically reduce or change the statistics. And I know at one point, the FBI had a long list of officer-involved shootings, but for a while there, they were including suicides.
Right.
And that kind of changes the round count pretty dramatically, because it's pretty simple to figure out how many rounds are fired in that.
Very, very few two and three shots fired during a suicide.
That's not statistically relevant to trying to teach people what they need to understand about, tactics, techniques, and procedures when it comes to, bettering themselves to win a gunfight.
Right. Just out of curiosity, and then I kind of want to ask you about your thoughts on the double action pistol, and I'm pretty sure they mirror my thoughts because I'm a pretty big fan. But you were talking earlier about your friend in Chicago that triple tapped the gentleman with the gun that was in front of him. Was that what he had trained out of the holster? Was three rounds pretty consistently?
Well, no, he actually had trained. It was actually his second shooting, actually.
Okay.
The first one was with the 9mm, believe it or not. A lot of rounds fired. It took the individual a long time to expire after the fact. There was multiple officers involved, and he decided 9mm was not effective, so he switched to a 45, and then he got in the shooting with the 45, and he realized that basically the opinion was that all handgun calibers suck, so he wanted as many bullets in his gun as he could get.
Yes.
So
that seems to be where most of us end up.
That's what really came down to from that standpoint.
Right.
So, you know, he changed his thought process to, you know, as I like to say, you know, there's no such thing as shooting somebody a little bit.
Right. Anyone that deserves shot a lot is my
right.
is
right.
my my special forces friend likes to say. So, and it's interesting too that you mentioned that, well, all handguns suck, so let's have a lot of bullets in the gun. That seems to be where most people end up on a long enough timeline. Have you noticed that?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We're seeing that with a lot of the guys in the military now too. When they do choose, you know, there are cases where there are certain organizations that have the option to carry other calibers, 40 and 45, and there seems to be a pretty significant trend of people going back to 9mm for that reason. It's got a lot of, you know, it's got a lot of rounds in it, and you know, the gun ends up being lighter with more capacity.
Right. Well, not an excuse not to practice, though, and we are telling everyone to go do that, too. But like I said at the beginning of the show, a fun conversation to have. Let's switch gears just a little bit and talk about double-action pistols. I've gotten in a lot of conversations with people, especially when I was doing my long endurance. Well, it wasn't a long endurance test. It was 25,000 rounds in 18 days through
intense.
Yeah, it was an intense endurance test.
I would consider it.
Yeah, you were there. 25,000 rounds in 18 days through the Salient SIG Mark 25 that they did, which was a really cool gun. But I had a lot of people tell me, well, why would you want to carry a double action gun? Other than the fact that having a hammer to block when I was reholstering into my appendix holster pointed at myself. Can you talk a little bit about your thoughts on double action, single action guns?
Well, sure. First of all, I agree with you on the hammer to put your thumb on a hammer when you're holstering appendix.
Yeah.
And that's pretty significant in any holstering anywhere, but appendix obviously specific.
Yes.
The issue that I have there is, you know, when you spend time training with a traditional double-action gun, the two things that you start to realize is that once you've trained with it a while, your first shot on target actually isn't any slower. And in certain situations, because it is a longer double-action trigger pull, you can actually be a lot more aggressive getting to the trigger than you ever would with a shorter, lighter trigger pull, like on a striker fired gun or a single action gun.
Right.
And so in certain cases, I can actually see it as an advantage, especially at closer ranges. The other thing is, for a lot of people, regardless of how well you like to think you're trained or anything, under duress, and I've seen this many, many times in force-on-force encounters, and we've seen the statistics of it and accidental shootings as well, you know, when people get stressed, they have a tendency to let their finger creep into that trigger guard. If they think that someone is right around the corner and they might jump out at any second and harm them, that finger has a tendency to creep in there. And there's been, you know, statistics or lots of studies done where, you know, even well-trained law enforcement officers under duress 20% of the time have their finger on the trigger when they shouldn't. So what we find out is it's not the weight of the trigger that keeps us out of trouble, keeps us from making that mistake. It's the distance that finger has to travel that keeps us out of trouble, whether that is a startle response to either a car backfiring or I slip, or whether that is a sympathetic muscle pull where I either have to do something really powerful with my legs or I reach and try to open a car door because, you know, in the case of a law enforcement officer, I've been chasing somebody across the country, you know, at 100 miles an hour, and he finally crashes and I jump out because I'm mad because, you know, I'm stressed out. and I've got my finger on the trigger, even though I should not.
Yeah.
I reach and I grab that car door to open it really hard. You know, it's a physical fact. If I put 150 pounds of pressure with the grip with my left hand, I can put 25% of that pressure with my right hand, including my trigger finger. So if my finger is creeped into that trigger guard over a short distance, I can pull through, a 25-pound trigger pull.
Right. And it's interesting you mentioned that just because and this comes up whenever I educate people on the SERPA holster or even some other things as far as people say, well, it's a training issue. Well, it's a training issue. And it seems like the point that people always miss is that as human beings, we tend to make mistakes, especially when we really can't afford to make any mistakes.
Absolutely.
It just seems like something that not enough people are aware of as far as that goes. We'll talk about this some more, and we got about 40 seconds left, so I'll interrupt you pretty soon here. But a lot of people complain about, well, you're learning two different trigger pulls and all that. I've always kind of been of the mindset, well, you're really only learning one, and then you're shooting the reset on all the others.
Correct.
Pretty much.
The other point is the first pull, is part of another kind of process of drawing or presenting the gun in most cases. And then after that, you have a very high quality, trigger pull from there on out. So
right.
It's not that difficult to learn that point. And it's funny when you have one argument when a guy says, hey, that's a training issue.
Yeah.
And then as if I had more training, and then they say, well, it's two trigger pulls, so that's a training issue.
Yeah, it's like, wait a second. Hey, I got to interrupt real quick just because we have to go to break, but we'll get into that a little bit more right now. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. I feel like I'm an Asian schoolgirl right now. Andy's taking photos of my feet.
Big clod-hopping feet.
In the conversations we have on the break, I swear to God, I really need to record these just so people can see. And I don't even think I can even hint at what we were talking about on air, can I?
No.
Okay. Anyway. Well, at least we don't have an advertiser for this specific segment that we're annoying right now. And I know the guys at Blackfire Ordnance Group have a sense of humor, so that's something. Anyway, back with Ernest Langdon. Hopefully he hasn't hung up at our silliness.
No, I'm still here.
Okay, perfect. It's always fun here at Ballistic Radio. So anyway, what were we talking about? Oh, yeah, double action guns. Why do you think there's such a... It seems to be that of all the different various firearms in existence, the double action guns get a lot of hate for their trigger system. Why is that, do you think?
It's a really good question. I think in a lot of cases, there ends up to being a hate for any gun that I'm forced to shoot.
Right.
That's not across the board, but you see that a lot of times when it's that this is a gun that you have to shoot and you don't have any other choices. So that tends to be the case. A lot of it is that, over the years, in the case of a traditional double action gun, we've forgotten how to shoot double action.
Right.
Once upon a time, in law enforcement, everything was double action because they were shooting revolvers. And some of your, the best shooters in the world started out shooting revolvers, and some of them, still continue to shoot revolvers. And learning how to shoot that double-action trigger pull correctly, is kind of a lost art. So a lot of firearms instructors out there, not their fault, they just don't know how to teach somebody how to pull, that first double-action shot. They only really understand, prep the trigger and then pull through a fairly short trigger pull.
Right.
Because of either 1911s or Glocks or some other striker fired type gun. It turns into a situation where, that first shot is the one that's the bane of everybody's existence and why, you know, I think a lot of people get very frustrated with the platform.
Yeah.
But there's also been a lot of people that have been very successful shooting traditional double action guns, both in competition and in law enforcement.
I was going to say you've done kind of well with a couple double action guns, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, I've been pretty successful with traditional double action guns in competition. I have 10 national championship titles, and all but one of those were with traditional double action guns.
Right. So it's, but they can't be shot well, Ernest. Hasn't someone told you that
yeah.
yet?
Well, I mean, the last few production, U.S. production nationals, actually, and, you know, overall titles were won with traditional double action guns. Tang Folio, I think, overall, and a, you know, Beretta Elite 2 as the U.S. title gun. And if you look at, you know, the top 16 in production now, it's, you know, starting to be dominated by traditional double action guns.
Right.
You know, one of the jokes used to be that if you did a, you know, if you gave me a Beretta, a Sig, a 1911, and said, hey, do trigger work on it, I want a trigger job, and I handed you back what was the equivalent of the very best striker fire trigger you ever pulled in your life, you would ask me how I screwed up your gun.
Right.
What did you do to my gun?
Yeah.
You would not be a happy customer. So it's interesting that we have that perspective. You know, what is a great trigger on this gun would be completely unacceptable on another gun.
Yeah.
So I think that's the reason you're seeing that is, first of all, people are starting to learn how to pull that first double action shot. And then once they do, they've got the equivalent of a, you know, a beautiful, you know, single action trigger pull from there on out.
Right. It's usually one that's got just a little bit of rolling break in, mm-hmm. which is kind of what I like. But and it's funny because
right.
I get to talk with a lot of manufacturers now with what I'm doing. And, you know, the conversation always goes, and yeah, we're going to try and get some of the roll out of the trigger. And I'm like, no, no,
don't do that.
Yeah.
That's a misperception that that a lot of people have is they, you know, it's one thing when you're standing there feeling a trigger from a dry fryer perspective and you want, you know, that glass rod perfectly clean break, but that type of break can also make it a very difficult trigger to shoot at speed because you don't really know when it's going to go off, and the whole quote surprise break. You know, really shouldn't be a surprise. If I'm trying to make the gun go off at a very specific time, I shouldn't be surprised by it. I need it to go off at a very specific time, and being able to calculate exactly when that is happening is a very important for me to be able to do. And that slight rolling break makes a big difference there.
When people think I'm weird because, like, a car CM9 or PM9 trigger to me is, like, amazing. Mm-hmm. I just wish they could get a short reset variant of it, and I'd be like thrilled. But so just real quick, and this was, I kind of, do you mind if I ask you about the project you did with Wilson real quick? Is that all right?
No, I don't mind at all.
Okay.
I don't mind at all.
So you mentioned people hate guns that they're forced to shoot. I've never been a big fan of Beretta M9s until recently, where I've decided, you know, I'd like to shoot one just because now I can decide to shoot one if I want to. You guys, you did something cool with Wilson Combat. We got about 2 minutes left. You want to talk about that real quick?
Well, excuse me.
That's all right.
I'm trying to get over a cold here. What actually, you know, Bill actually just brought me in to try to, you know, give him the insights and the time that I spent doing custom Beretta work when I was running my own company. Talk about the gun, talk about ideas and projects, and work with his gunsmiths. On what I had learned about doing trigger work on Berettas. I've done several thousand trigger jobs on Berettas when I was running my company years ago, and so that was the main purpose. Bill has been a fan of the Berettas for a long time, you know, hasn't really publicized that, but people that have been around him have known that for quite some time.
Favorite handgun.
He shoots a Beretta very well. As a matter of fact, he, you know, shot a Beretta at the very first IDPA Nationals.
Right.
So he's been a big fan for some time. And those of you that, buy guns on Gun Broker and pay any attention to what's going on with the Beretta guns, Bill Wilson's often the one that wins a lot of the high bids because he sees a gun on there he wants. You better want it a lot more than he does.
Right.
So,
right.
He's a big fan, and so it's also been the service pistol of the U.S. military since 1984, 85, I believe, 84. So it is, you know, it's got quite a bit of history there. And it, you know, there are, you know, contrary to maybe popular belief, there are a lot of people out there that really do like that gun and shoot it well. They believe in it. I know that, you know, Ken Hackathorn once said that the one gun that he would go buy out off the counter, get it behind the counter, load it, and be prepared to carry it, you know, to defend his life was a Beretta.
Yeah.
Because he, you know, everyone he ever owned worked perfectly right out of the box.
Well, hey.
And a lot of people say, well, you need to put a couple hundred rounds to the gun, make sure there's not any break it in, that kind of thing.
I'm more worried about that after I've taken a gun apart. I actually had that problem recently. Hey, we're going to be
sure
going
still
here.
Working when you put it back together.
Yeah, well, when you leave two or three parts out, it's funny what happens.
Yeah, that can be a problem.
Whoops. So, hey, we're going to be leaving here just in a second or two, but I wanted people to get to your website again. What was that again?
It's www.langdontactical.com.
All right, perfect. And for, see, if I talk to you off air and all that and I try and convince you to come out to Cincinnati, any way I can maybe get you a head out this way?
Sure, absolutely.
Perfect. We'll try and get a class going for the Ballistic Radio listeners. Hey, Ernest, I really appreciate you coming on tonight. Hopefully
Thanks,
you had
John,
fun.
John, I appreciate you having me.
Hey, no problem. So anyway, next week we are going to be talking with the real Dr. House, Dr. Sherman House, one of the more interesting and lesser known figures in the gun industry. He's actually one of the organizers behind Polypalooza 2, which is going to be in Garrettsville, Ohio, I want to say August 16th and 17th. We'll be discussing 22 caliber rifles and handguns for people with disabilities, as well as why dentists seem to congregate to the gunfighting arts, you know, Doc Holliday. Anyway, make sure you check out ballisticradio.com. Like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks for listening, everyone. And as always, be safe and see you next Sunday at 7 p.m.